All right, good afternoon. I wanted to welcome you to this afternoon's discussion, the ICE Cultural and Linguistics Services Team, and the discussion around video remote interpreting services. My name is Christopher McGlone. I'm with Sharp Community Medical Group in San Diego and a member of the ICE Board, and it's my pleasure to introduce the team today. Just as a reminder, the session is being recorded. During the Q&A or anytime there's a question and answer period, please use the microphones. I think Doug will help out and someone will be here to potentially walk those to you, but if not, they're at the front of each aisle. So with that, today's panel includes Valencia Walker. Valencia is the Language Assistant Program Compliance Director at Cigna. And to her left is Evelyn Gonzalez-Figueroa, Director of Cultural and Linguistics Competency at Altamed. So please join me in welcoming today's panel.
Thank you so much. I was glad to see the participation here for this session, so it's great to see all of you here today. We've had a lot of discussion on, I know one of the biggest topics today was social determinants of health. And one of the biggest risk factors for social determinants of health is language. And how can we improve language services to our customers? So it all ties in and relates to some of the other topics in compliance. So again, welcome to our session. And I'd like to get started before I introduce Evelyn. I want to get started by sharing some of the challenges that we have heard in implementing language video remote interpreting services. Okay, implementing video remote services. Let's listen to some of the challenges. We've heard of some of the advantages. There's cost, it's on demand. You can eliminate the need for full-time employees for coordinating services. You have patients that have no-show. Okay, no-show. Is that better? No-show and cancellations. And even the interpreter may not make the event. So these are some advantages. So let's talk about some of the challenges, fraud, waste, and abuse. How do you know that interpreter service is being used for your health plan patient? Equipment ownership, who should own the equipment? Should it be the health plan, the provider, or the vendor? And who's maintaining maintenance on it? And then screen size, is the screen big enough for the customer or the patient to be able to see full body of the interpreter? Can they see the hands and fingers if they're signed? Are they also able to see it from all positions? Connect time. What is the connect time that is acceptable for video remote services? And does that service roll into telephonic services if the connect time has exceeded its time? And also internet. I never even thought about the internet. Do you have are you in a location and everyone who's using it under your watch, are they in a location with high speed or excellent internet services? We definitely do not want blurry images or audio popping in and out while the conversation is going on with your patient. So next up, what our cultural and linguistics unit we have priorities for 2020 in regards to video remote services. We're hoping to put together some guidance tools on requests for proposal, questions for your video remote interpreting services vendors, and we'd like to do a white paper for health plans and providers. So now I'd like to introduce Evelyn Gonzalez-Figueroa.
Thank you so much, Valencia. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And I think we've decided I think we've decided to stand just because there's only two of us and you all are spread among us here. So I was very pleased to see that many of you are using video remote interpretation, but I was also pleased to see that many of you all aren't, so we can all learn from each other. I have had the pleasure of being with Altamed for a couple of years, and one of my main tasks has been to deploy video remote interpretation. And joining me here is Jennifer Caravalli, who serves as our business analyst. And I can tell you that one of the lessons learned for us, and at the end we can discuss, is the importance of having the whole monitoring and understanding your data in a way that is comprehensive so that you can insert the voice of the customer. So I'm hoping that today Although I do have a presentation just so that I can stay on track, because I was telling Valencia, are you timing me? Because I can easily stay on topic or go too deep into a certain area, and I'm going to do that if that's where you wish me to go at the end. So I'm hoping that after today that we will all have a better understanding of our facilitators and barriers. In addition to those posed by Valencia, I'm sure that among us there's more that we may not have mentioned, and we need to insert those in the conversation. But more than anything, identify the facilitators for success for all, infrastructure as a healthcare system, but also for our patients and our provider communication. I was very pleased to hear, I think I acknowledge, my main slide here was to acknowledge Jennifer in the audience, because she's joining me today. I was so pleased to hear Valencia say the importance of incorporating language in this whole concept of the social determinants of health. Because people are limited English proficient populations, are communities who are, with limited English proficiency and experiencing other gaps in healthcare, will experience more significant or disproportionate health outcomes, and is very important for us to consider. So this morning and in every session when I hear disparities or social determinants of health, I'm always looking for, go, please say something about language. Please say something about language. And so I'm glad that we did have this opportunity here to incorporate that today. So here, I borrowed this from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. This is one of the slides that they have where they do really take deeper dives on the importance of patient safety. And one of the studies that they did, they looked at what were the root causes of communication problems among the patients. And the two pillars of the root causes were language barriers and cultural barriers. So those were folding up to communication barriers that were leading up to safety issues and safety concerns and adverse events for patients. So you can definitely go onto that website and look for that information that gets you all the details of the research. But for us, the reason we do this work, and we know this, is, and this is just to get a platform for why we're doing this work, increased diversity. So not just increased diversity, but the limited English proficient population is growing, and us being equipped and ready to serve is key. The next reason for doing this work is the importance of patient-provider communication. Again, I alluded to this for safety issues, and also how we connect those safety issues to longer-term health outcomes. And that's the second reason for doing the work that we're doing. And then the third reason is the importance of having our patients and our members understand. So not just language, but culturally, understanding and having them know what it is that they're doing at the end of the day after the visit. And the tool that we have with video remote interpretation helps us to advance that narrative in terms of getting our patients to know and understand in the way that they want. So for us, for AltaMed, we've taken the video remote interpretation implementation, and I've segmented it in three key areas. In 2018, we did an exploratory phase where we assessed two vendors for about 3 months. So we assessed two vendors in four locations, and we wanted to see which one of these vendors is going to be more suitable for our culture, for our patients, for our providers. So with that, we obtained feedback from our patients. A lot of the work that we did had we looked at research, we looked at literature reviews, white papers, and one of the gaps was the voice of the customer, the user. So that was one of the gaps, and we couldn't get what are patients saying about this, so that we can formulate our business case for incorporating video remote interpretation in our business. So that was one of the gaps. So we proceeded to ensure that we included surveys, we included feedback from staff, providers, and patients during this exploratory phase. And at the same time, we're also exploring what would our policies and procedures look like to reinforce and support VRI if it were to be the way at the end of the day. So all these things were incorporated in the exploratory phase. Then we deployed VRI in 25 locations. So we used that. We used all the things that we learned in the exploratory phase, the feedback, but also fully understanding the importance of internet, the importance of the infrastructure. So we had all those lessons learned already under our belt before fully deploying. And still we felt we still had questions if our providers, if our staff, if our patients were going to welcome VRI. So it wouldn't. We had some feedback already that it was welcomed, but we didn't know for sure if we've deployed across the business, across the healthcare system, our healthcare system, then would it be acceptable? So right now, we are in the adoption phase. So right now, as we speak in our current phase, we're looking at our video remote interpretation usage in our locations. We continue to receive feedback from our patients, providers, and our staff, and we're looking at service levels. So these are all some of the areas that Valencia mentioned so that we can bring to you today and begin to kick off this dialogue. So 2020 and on, we will continue to observe usage, but also continue to survey around specific health literacy. So are we really getting at patients' understanding? Do they really understand when they walk away from us, if they use video remote interpretation? We are also going to be monitoring cost, and I have some cost preliminary findings today, but we're going to be looking at that further. And, of course, ultimately, we want to observe long-term health outcomes and compare. So for that, you all know that we need controls. We need to see who's using it versus who's not using video remote interpretation and what impacts that has. So for that, we need more time. So next, thank you. So in a nutshell, evidence-based recommendations all include not just technology, the voice of the customer, but our in-person, our patients are surveyed in-person. Providers and staff have the opportunity to give us feedback online so that it's easier for them and we're not, messing up their flow. So go on. So here's an example of how our usage is trending per month. So we finished deployment in January 2019, so not too long ago. And you could see how the usage is trending upward for us. So you can see in October where we're at. And if you click on the next slide, we can show you these are minutes, around 28,000 minutes, maybe 29,000. And then that leads to in October, click again please so we can see that, 72,000 minutes. So these are total minutes. So our first question, are we going to observe usage? Are our providers and staff going to adopt it readily? And is what are our patients going to say? And that's going to get to our next, in a few slides. But go on. Next slide, please. So here, this is telling us average answer speed per month. So you could see that we're looking at the second. So I think there was a question. What should the answer speed be, right? Mm-hmm. So then that's going to be depending on you and the vendor, how you negotiate. So we negotiated 30 seconds or less so that our providers or staff could just click. And then within 30 seconds or less, you would have your interpreter on the spot. So with this, I wanted to point out, if you recall the prior slide where we saw the upward trend, so up usage has not impacted service level. So they're still answering fast. There was a time here, in all transparency, where we did see a slowdown in service level, and that was only because there was a competition with our Epic rollout. And that was very important for us to consider. And we needed to increase the internet infrastructure for Wi-Fi. But still, it was still okay. But that's something for all of us to consider. Next slide, please. The top languages that are used. So we have Spanish, American Sign Language, Mandarin, Cantonese, and Arabic as our top languages with video remote interpretation. And I think there was another question that said, you know, are patients going to see the hands, and all that. So we have the device so that the provider can change back and forth so that the patient always has the interpreter visible from the waist up. So those are part of our training protocol so that we can ensure that American Sign Language patients that need American Sign Language are they're not getting less quality interpretation and communication. Next slide. So in addition to surveys and feedback, we also have at the end of the session the opportunity for providers and staff to rate the session and to provide comments. So we have a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the most satisfied. And you can see that overall we've gotten for interpreter rating 4.59. We felt that in the beginning when we did the exploratory phase that we should not just focus on the technology, the video quality, that we should ensure to also address any perceptions around interpreters. So that's what we teased out the two, interpreter rating as well as video quality. And in this case, the video quality, we feel that rated lower because of the hiccup that we had with additional health, technology being rolled out at the same time. Next. Here's to show you the trending of unique users across our system. So we showed you minutes. We showed you minutes use. So these are the unique users around, 3,000 in August, and then we're showing you for the last 3 months, and almost 4,000 in October. So we see a nice upward trend that if we take a deeper dive, we may get to see if we have high utilizers at some level. So here we wanted to show you those users who used it more than once throughout that time. So that's trending. So we can infer that those who use it are not saying no from here. So yes, there are patients who have said, no, I don't want to use, VRI. I would like someone in person. And we know that that's a preference for many of our patients and our members, as well as for our providers. We all want someone there in person. So the training that we do provide encourages our healthcare team to socialize and position video remote interpretation as this cool thing to have. It's like Facebook. It's like FaceTime. And most of our patients, no matter what age they are in the spectrum, they love it, with a few exceptions. And so here we have 84 providers that use it consistently and 248 staff, and that with that is, we're trying to work on the workflow, and that's something for everyone to consider here. Who is going to initiate the call? Who is going to get the system set up? So that's something that we didn't prescribe from the very beginning because we wanted the provider to be the owner of the session. But we are learning that the provider is busy and may not really get it ready. So then now the staff is getting it ready for him or for her, and we're finding that that's becoming a little bit more just easier for the provider. So that's something for us to consider next. So here's my cost slide. So one of the assumptions at the beginning in our exploratory phase, we learned that having American Sign Language accessible to our patients would decrease our cost for bringing them on site, but also would increase access. So we could serve walk-ins, and we could actually do away with those, sometimes our interpreter's not showing up, not our patient's not showing up, but the interpreter's not showing up and still having to pay for it. So we have here, I'm showing you two phases. This is before video remote interpretation here in this phase, July through January. And then we could see that the average cost is around $11,000 or so. After video remote interpretation, consistently after all the kinks and everything was taken care of, we can see that our cost went down to around $4,478. So this is just in the year that we have seen, study usage, socialization, training, we can see that there are some savings with on-site interpretation. And this on-site interpretation is not just American Sign Language, but also other languages. So just to assure you that we hope to continue to monitor. Here, we are not discouraging our providers and healthcare team from using on-site interpretation. There are some situations and some members that do need, they're vulnerable, they do need that person in front of them. And so we are not discouraging that at all. But with that, we still are seeing some cost savings. So next, patients' perceptions. We do have a small survey at the end, as I shared. And so we surveyed 105 patients as shown here. And just, you know, straightforward, very simple, after today's visits, I understand the steps I have to follow to better my health. You can see for yourself the high percentages, over 95 for the most part across the board for most of the questions that we have here. I was satisfied with my experience with the video interpreter. The video interpreter helped to understand the questions I had, and I would recommend Ultimate to my family and friends because they offer video remote interpretation. We weren't being coercive at all. We just wanted to make sure, well, what are you really thinking about this and the fact that you are having the communication in your language? So would you recommend us to your friends and family? And so the answer was yes. And then, so we also polled and surveyed our providers, and theirs is a little bit lower, so the patient experience is higher with video remote interpretation. It's like, oh my gosh, I actually get to speak to a provider and I get to be understood. So with the provider, we know that they would like someone in person always, so that's what we have to make sure that we socialize it first with the healthcare team so that they can help to broker that experience with our patients. But anyhow, here we are. Did the interpreter communicate all the information correctly? You can see those answers are, you know, a little bit below 90%, but nonetheless, there's no adverse reactions to video remote interpretation. And I think for us being the first year, you know, what are the things that we need to continue to do to prepare the healthcare team to use, but also to know what it cannot and can do. Some providers, even if they don't speak the language, they have very strong opinions about what they think the interpreter said. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, but that's, you know, that, those are the things that we have to know that that is out there to ensure that we do socialize it so that providers are more open and ready to have the technology. Next slide, please. And then we asked our staff. Our staff had better responses and reactions to the video remote interpretation, closer to 90% in most in some of the questions that we have, ability to communicate, whether they perceive the interpreter to be respectful, and whether they perceive the interpreter to communicate what they needed to communicate. So they are, you know, this is really nice, trending a little bit higher because we know that some of our staff members do speak the language. They may not be certified in medical terminology, so they understand. So they could see, oh, okay, the interpreter is saying what they need to be saying. So that's the kind of feedback we want. So next, lessons learned. So I think from here we know that using video remote interpretation helps us meet the requirement for Section 1557. We're not putting our patients in jeopardy for saying the wrong thing. Our safety issues are mitigated. So monitoring and tracking is very key for us. So we own our dashboard, so we have access to our dashboard on the spot in real time. We can see who uses the devices where. So with Jennifer, we are able to program our devices by clinic. And then so in data collections, we have to use our employee ID number so we know who uses it, and also report the medical record number of the patient so that we can know who the patient is that used it and when. And we have been asked to report on an end of life situation where a family was concerned that the family member did not receive the information in the language, and we were able to prove that the provider did use interpretation by linking the time that they used it with the medical record number. So in terms of monitoring and tracking, that's information that we actually had, we're learning along the way. We're also learning that a medical record number, on top of that, can we add date of birth for the patient? So we know health plan, so we are able to track it across the system, not just the healthcare system, but across the data systems. And I think I alluded to sensitive encounters. So VRI is definitely useful and has been, for us, we've shown we can have access to we provide access to care on a timely basis, on walk-in basis, and that is very important. But we know that if the providers and the healthcare team knows their patients and there are some sensitivities around that, that we should prepare for that. And I think I'm speaking to the choir on that, but that is something we continue to reinforce. I do recommend piloting, for feedback and also for technology. Because if we had not piloted, I don't know that we would have been so confident about how it would be successful or not. So I even if we say, okay, we're good, we're ready to go, the piloting was very useful for us. Wi-Fi, definitely, VRI is very contingent on Wi-Fi. So we tried MiFis, we tried other types of ways to mitigate when there was no Wi-Fi. And it does put in jeopardy the experience for both the providers, who's the owner of this tool, and that impacts how they're going to be presenting it to the patient. And then it creates a domino effect, and at the end, that patient may not receive the information that they need in the language that they wish. And awareness and training, we trained video remote interpretation, how to use it. We did all the great things we did, but of course we did it in the context of class, the cultural linguistic appropriate services standards, the importance of providing the communication and making sure that our patients who needed it got what they needed in the language that they wanted. Our trainings were in person, so we did take the show on the road across our 25 or so locations, and we supplemented it with an online training. So if you received our training in person and then you still needed to, review some areas, we couldn't come out because we were already in other places, so we already had an online training ready for you to go in and take. And I think that with that, next, please. I think I just, I said, well, overall health literacy trends, we are looking at, CGCAP scores to see how those trend before and after VRI. We extracted some health literacy questions. There's about 12 or so that we're going to track before and after VRI. And then the health outcomes analysis is going to it's taking more time in terms of a design perspective. So we can pick the right health issue. Is it going to be AC1s, tracking that? What are the issues that, the health issue that we're going to select? So we're still in the process of doing that. And cost, we continue to monitor that. And with that, on behalf of AltaMed, the entire team, and of course, the industry collaborator effort, I don't want to say ICE, but I guess team, I'm here. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marie Mercado-Grijalva, and I'm actually from LA Care Health Plan, now in the compliance area. But I was actually wondering, for your pilot, at the 25 locations, did you guys have any guidelines for when it was appropriate to use VRI versus in person? Because some of the clinics that we had examined implementing VRI at, the situations might not be as applicable. So, for example, PT and OT, it's a very in-person experience where VR, like, it would be another machine to try and wheel around with the members, and maybe not appropriate in that circumstance. So in your 25 locations, did you have any restrictions or guidelines for that?
So thank you for your question. And actually, when we did the pilots, we explored it on four locations, not on 25. But since our deployment, we are building up those lessons learned and best practices, and reinforcing the fact that it's VRI is not appropriate for all situations. Behavioral health is one of the areas that we know for sure there are some patients that will require in-person. Dental care is another area, in addition to the ones you've mentioned. So right now we're getting the message that continue to use video remote interpretation, but let's work in understanding those vulnerable situations where we do need to have someone in person. Thank you for that.
Thanks. And then your cost analysis or your numbers from January, was that for only the pilot time, or was that actually from when you launched at the 25 locations?
Since the launch of the 25 locations.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Janine Angel from HealthNet, California. What was the deciding factor for you choosing between the two vendors? How did you make that decision? What bent the curve for you?
Thank you for that question. I think, and I'm going to say that to all of the questions because it's like, oh, okay, I forgot to say that. So thank you for bringing that up. So one of the deciding factors for us was the perception of the interpreter. If our providers had so many concerns and complaints about interpreters, and that added up even in the pilot phase, and we brought it back to the vendor, and nothing, they didn't move fast enough, or we weren't convinced. At the end of the day, it wasn't really the technology per se, because the vendors were equitable when it came to that. It was really the customer service part. So if our providers had so many complaints about the interpreter and the quality of the interpretation, that just added up, and it made it very clear for us who to go with.
I'm Joanna Roseman with AvantPage. We're actually a translation provider, but with a little less experience in VRI. I was just curious how it's affected your scheduling, because I imagine that probably with in-person interpreting, that was always scheduled to get someone in. Is your VRI on demand, and how's that affected your team?
So it has improved the scheduling, and it's because it's right there. So it's walk-ins can actually, use it. So we, in terms of access to care, and one of the health outcomes is lack of access to care. So we're hoping to, understand that better and mitigate that. So it has. So in terms of there's no need to schedule. Mm-hmm. So we have been more available for that interpretation.
I'm Otilia from Contra Costa. I'm curious what kind of video technology was used by the vendor you used. They use an iPad, or was it the stand-up that goes on a cart that gets moved around, or is it fixed on the wall? What type was it?
So we were using the carts. We were using the carts so that they could be, the concept was used by the healthcare team. So no matter who needs it at any given time, they should be able to pull the cards. We know that right now, if there's an increase in need, we can add more cards. However, for dental, we have been exploring what would it be if we just put it on the screen so that the patient has a better experience, because of the cart. You could move it, but it might not be that clean of an experience. So we're exploring that now.
And was it in your presentation which vendor you preferred?
No. Is it okay to say?
We try not to endorse any vendors with our team, but.
I mean, so it would be good to know.
Yes,
which
I agree with you.
Higher ratings. Yeah. We would have to do a similar
and you
analysis.
Can share. We just don't endorse it, but we can share.
Right, which is why I left them out, because they're still, our vendor, and we're still holding them accountable. So when we tested them, we had InDemand and Stratus as our pilots, and then we went with Stratus. And then a few months later, they merged. So I'm like here not endorsing anyone per se, and that is real. So they merged, right? So then when we heard about the merge, we were on the phone with the president of Stratus and say, wait a minute, we picked you for a reason. You can't change the rules as we go along here. So they have been working with us to ensure that the service level and our interpretation, the perceptions around the quality of interpreter doesn't change, and in fact, it has gotten better. But thank you for asking. So I'm like, oh, can I stay?
Marie, again, from LA Care. Just, do you guys have any lessons learned? Because something that we have encountered in general in and was talked about earlier today is California has an interesting model when it comes to providers being contracted with multiple plans, multiple provider groups. So how have you guys dealt with the challenges, some of the challenges you aired, like who owns the machine, who does the maintenance, how do you handle payments across those multiple lines of business and multiple plans? Have you guys had any experience or lessons learned for that?
Well, the main lesson learned, thank you for that question too, is that we are not being reimbursed at all right now by any of the health plans. So just for the record. So we are actually absorbing all the cost. We do own the devices. We, in terms of our cost analysis and implementation and rollout, we felt that that would be the most cost-efficient manner for us to own. You might have to switch every 2 or 3 years, and that still would lend us some cost savings. So we own. So we absorb all those costs, and also the training and IT team effort has been proven, you know, that very useful. So we don't have to bring someone, we don't have to bring the vendor out and pay extra and take it. We have had to do that, but not pay it extra because we're working on this together. But I think we have a good relationship with them, and in the future, that's something that we definitely would need to carve in into the contract. Did I answer all your questions about who owns and all that?
I think from the standpoint, as close, I mean, payment-wise, you said that you're basically absorbing, you're taking full fiscal responsibility and ownership, and, of course, maintenance by default. Okay. Thank you.
This is Otilia again from Contra Costa. So in connection to the previous question, I just wanted to mention that we actually have a private provider who decided to contract directly with a vendor, and we figured out a way for them to bill us. And they're discussing billing other health plans, so I think there's a need to kind of explore that more, because you have the situation where the provider is seeing, you know, patients from 5 different health plans, and if they have one device that this company did not charge them for the device, it was just hourly fee, so we were able to very easily just set up a payment through claims, and there is a code that you can use, and they bill us in 15-minute increments. So it has worked well with just this one provider has tried it.
In terms of next step, definitely we are looking at reimbursement models that can help support the system, and of course expand, because we, you know, if it works for us, we want to replicate that across. And in terms of tracking, that's why when we we can monitor with medical record number, but also add other indicators so that we know that this patient, you know, the health plan they belong to, and therefore the type of reimbursement that we can negotiate with the health plan. But definitely that's forthcoming.
So Janine from HealthNet again. So, you know, we provide all the health plans, you know, are required to provide translation services and all of that. So how when the member will call member services and say, I have an appointment, I need a translator to meet me at the appointment, you know, what is, are the members who are coming in, or I guess, how did you socialize the idea that you have this technology available so that members knew, I no longer have to call HealthNet to get a translator because my local PCP's office already has the service available. So how did you socialize that, or I guess inform members that this technology is available for them if they want it ahead of their appointment?
So that is still in progress. So we have we're working with our patient service center so that when members call for an appointment, that they, if they need an interpreter, that they know, okay, you will have an interpreter already there. And on site, we have like, you know, little cards that are given to them by the front office so that they know video remote interpretation accessible at no cost to you, regardless of health plan. And also, we just finished producing an internal TV ad. So for low literacy or no literacy patients, they can see the TV ad, and they can know, and then once they experience the actual service, they know that this is there for them at any time. But I do think that that's something that with in partnership, we can do a better job of. Mm-hmm. Like, if the patient does call the health plan directly, that health plan themselves won't know, may not know always that we have VRI.
If it's at one location.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can do more of that. And once we are getting reimbursement from the health plans, it'll be better.
Hi, Krista Briganti from Blue Shield California Promise Health Plan. Kind of a little bit of an off-topic question, but I thought I'd take advantage of you being here available to answer questions. But I think it's important for any interpreter services, including the virtual services, but we're really having a hard time identifying really the cultural needs of our members and the cultural diversity in our provider network. Just really looking at it from a data perspective and I'm not from the cultural linguistics department. I'm more of a clinical access NCQA perspective, but you know, in deciding who needs services that you're describing now and what provider offices would be more culturally appropriate and would benefit from these types of services versus can the provider provide these services or the staff, et cetera, do you have a good perspective on how to capture that, not the language, but the cultural diversity of members and providers?
I don't have a straight answer, and I think that's the value of us being here, and I am happy that you're not with the CNL team raising this question and that you are in a different team raising the question, because in terms of our work, that has been one of the challenges in terms of creating champions across the organization, creating champions across the health system. So we know now that there are gaps, and even if we don't want to address language as the crux, but language is the crux, because even if we are assuming a language that, you know, preferences, we're assuming interpretation needs or not needing interpretation by our patients or members, it's really hard, because then the patient presents for care at a different, you know, healthcare system where they're not equipped and they don't know to call the health plan for interpretation services. So then there's a breakdown in communication already that starts with language. The cultural piece, with our training, we do a lot of onboarding trainings. All of our providers are onboarded. At the very least, at the organizational level, we ensure that they understand the importance of having, understand the community from which the members come. And besides a needs assessment and understanding higher level data, your county data and such to link up, I think there's just more work to do on that, because the cultural pieces are so nuanced, and we don't want to fall prey to the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And so it is a very, I think we do need to work as a team with that. And
right.
I'm here if that's something you wish to do in the future.
And we're here at Cigna. We've seen it as a major hurdle. I mean, we've been supporting our California Language Assistance Program as well as our federal program for over 10, 12 years. And we send surveys out to our customers. We educate our customers that it's confidential information. We're not sharing it with anyone. We need this information to be able to better support you with your language and cultural needs. So we send a survey out that includes not only language, but of their race and ethnicity as well. And our rates continue to be, you won't believe how low, with the response rates. And again, it's educating our staff. When they speak to customers, explaining to them why we need this information and what we're using it for your health outcomes. I mean, you know, for our better quality management pilot programs. It's not, you know, to distribute out, you know, socially out beyond your healthcare needs, but yet we still face the same extremely low response rates. So it's been a challenge, I think, for years for our cultural and linguistics ICE team on how we can improve those response rates from our customers, because we need that direct data. You know, there's other ways of catching statistical data from indirect collection, but we want direct data from our customers, and it's been a challenge for years. So if anybody has any ideas, join our group. Join us.
Hi again, Marie from LA Care. Kind of related to what they were saying, just ideas. Some of the ways that we've captured member demographic data, like written language, spoken language, race, and ethnicity, has been during inbound calls. So one of our checks is every 3 years we will try and validate a member's spoken language, written language, alternative format needs as part of the call. And we have pre-prepared scripts, because we know it's a sensitive topic, to answer their questions about why are you collecting this information, why do you need it. We are validating more so than collecting. So we will validate what we got from the state. Hey, the state told us your language is X, as opposed to, hey, what language do you speak? Because we want it to be more of a, hey, we have information on you. We just want to make sure we're sending you stuff appropriately. So from the member's standpoint, that's one way that we've captured it. And while it took a very, very long time, I think about 10 years, we're at like over 50% for our Medi-Cal population on self-validated information. So it's a slow and steady process, but not every member calls. For the provider data, because I know that you had mentioned provider data, we do try to capture race and ethnicity as part of the credentialing application. Now, granted, it is entirely voluntary, so you do not guarantee that you capture this information, and you have to reiterate that it won't impact their rates or their ability to serve members. But if we do have it, while we don't advertise it in our provider directories, we do have it accessible on the back end. So if they call member services and they were curious about, like, oh, I just feel more comfortable culturally with a doctor who is my ethnicity because they might understand the cultural challenges I feel, then that's something that we can search for providers in the network if we have that information available to try and link a member to a doctor from that standpoint. And that is actually one of the standards that you have to meet for MCQA multicultural healthcare distinction. So that's how we've met it.
Great. So. Thank you.
That's all the time we have. Let's have a big hand for our panelists.